Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it is December 14th, Thursday, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. I was delayed getting on, but it looks like I'm on time to some extent. And what we're going to do is we're going to try to cover some local stuff first and then move on to some national as well as international news. So bear with me a moment here. I guess one of the most important locally is an article that was written by Mary Marvin Esquire. She's the mayor of the village of Bronxville. So she writes that positions that the vast majority of mayors in New York State are urging elected officials to support. And so she writes in her column of last week, she says, I talked about legislation in Albany that mayors have to monitor carefully. She continues, I continue the Albany Outlook theme, but from a different bent. The following are advocacy positions that the vast majority of mayors in the state are urging and reaching out to their respective elected officials to hopefully sponsor or support. Again, every one of these subjects either has a financial or operational repercussion on local governments. One of the issues is the recovery of fees from cable and internet providers. Unlike traditional cable services for which local franchising authorities receive 5% of the gross revenue derived from the operation of the cable system, internet television and digital streaming alternatives delivered via the same infrastructure are not subject to the same revenue regulation. And to recover some of these costs and services, these services are provided. Other states have adopted legislation imposing a 5% fee on digital streaming providers that are using public right-of-way to sell their services. The New York Conference of Mayors supports analogous legislation. So reduce the interest rate on judgments from 9% to a market rate. So pursuant to New York State General Municipal Law, quote, the interest rates on judgments paid by a local government shall not exceed 9%, end quote. And despite this language, more often than not, courts uniformly apply the 9% rate. While the requirement to pay interest on judgments is fair and equitable, the artificially higher rate of interest rates, the higher interest, creates a barrier to appeal since municipal defendants risk your tax dollars having to pay substantial interest costs if the appeal is unsuccessful. And this deters municipal defendants from appealing, even if we believe we have a strong case. Conversely, the current interest rate acts as an incentive for plaintiffs to unnecessarily proceedings, and mayors would like to see the interest rate tied to a market rate, perhaps the one-year United States Treasury bill rate. So increase the amount a public employee retiree can earn without pension impact. As a background, very often, it makes prudent financial sense for a municipality to hire an expert, be it a building inspector assessor after they have retired from another municipality to work on a part-time basis. The new municipality does not have the funding obligation for pensions or health care, which are significant financial burdens. And under current New York State law, a retiree receiving a public pension is prohibited from earning more than $35,000 per year in public employment without incurring a potential reduction in their pension benefits. And often the result is that hourly professional staffers have to quit mid-year when they see their numbers creeping up to $35,000. The Mayor's Association would like to see an increase to $50,000, and this change would help local governments hold the line on escalating employee benefits by going the independent contractor route. So we have the authorization for the installation of speed cameras. Red light and speed cameras have been authorized by the state legislature on a limited basis in specific municipalities across New York, including our neighboring Yonkers. And this technology has proven to be a cost-effective tool for local government to help reduce running red lights and speeding in pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods and school zones. As a result, mayors are advocating for the authority to install and enforce red light and speed cameras statewide. Then we also have the design-build-construction model. The design-build model in a construction project is a delivery system used as an alternative to the traditional design-build-build model. The latter approach, which is the only approach authorized under state law for villages and cities when pursuing building projects, requires the design portion of the project to be bid separately from the construction portion of the project. The design-build system, in contrast, is an integrated method that enables local government to obtain design and construction services under one contract. By relying on a single point of responsibility, the design-build model minimizes risks for the project owner, accelerates the delivery schedule by consolidating the design phase and construction phase, and cuts costs by streamlining the entire construction process. Well, several state agencies, including the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Transportation, the Thruway Authority, State University of New York, and the Bridge Authority are currently authorized to use design-build. Authorizing design-build for municipal governments would enable local governments to reduce costs, thus encouraging continuing development in communities. Then there's the issue of bail reform. In 2022, the state legislature addressed several concerns pertaining to the repercussions of the bail reforms of 2019. However, more needs to be done. The law should be amended to increase the number of offenses that are bail eligible and to allow judges to consider an expanded list of criteria and be authorized to undertake a comprehensive, balanced assessment of dangerous, quote-unquote, as a factor when making a bail determination. And this standard of, quote, dangerous, end quote, is used in the vast majority of other states. Then we have the privacy of government records, governmental records. While it is well established that public employees enjoy a lesser degree of privacy than their counterparts in the private sector, the New York State Committee on Open Government has long held that unfounded and or unsubstantiated claims against a public employee may be withheld from disclosure on the basis that it could constitute an invasion of personal privacy. The Mayor's Conference recommends that the Public Officers Law be amended to codify into law this guidance to protect public servants from having to defend their reputations against unfounded and or unsubstantiated claims. Then we have the employee leave schedule. The New York State General Municipal Law grants municipalities the authority to establish policies related to their employees' vacation time, sick leave, and leave of absence. The ability for a municipality to manage their workforce is extremely important, as personnel is the largest cost driver in the municipal budget. Nevertheless, it has become increasingly commonplace for the state legislature to pass bills mandating certain types of leave policies without acknowledging and funding the costs associated with them. The Mayor's support legislation that would prohibit the state from enacting mandated public employees' leave time laws unless funding is appropriated to offset the costs associated with such leave. Then we have the New York State Scaffold Law. Enacted in 1885, New York Scaffold Law holds contractors, employers, and property owners absolutely liable for gravity-related injuries, even if the worker was grossly negligent. Since municipalities are largely property owners, we are faced with widespread liability for accidents that occur on work sites, often beyond our supervision. Studies have proven that general liability insurance premiums have skyrocketed due to increased litigation resulting from our scaffold law. In fact, New York, the only state left of this law on the books, insurance premiums are 300 to 1,200% higher than any other state in the country. As a result, municipalities involved in construction projects are faced with significantly higher construction costs. Following our neighboring states, we recommend a comparative negligence standard for personal injury, property damage, or wrongful death actions arising under the scaffolding law. And this legislation would create a more equitable standard by holding employees who directly contributed to their own injuries liable for the appointment of fault. So, and she writes at the end that her eye is on Albany. So bear with me a moment. I'm going to put you on a quiet hold for a second. Bear with me. Okay. Sorry about that delay. I should be able to continue, so bear with me a moment. Okay. Well, a lot of things are happening all over the place. Okay, let's just look at what's happening on the world stage. Putin says that Russia can move forward, quote-unquote, despite Western sanctions and political isolation. President Vladimir Putin said today that Russia can, quote, move forward, end quote, despite Western economic sanctions and political isolation, stemming from its Ukraine offensive, opening a long-awaited end of a news year of end-of-year news conference. So Putin has sought to reassure Russians that the dragging conflict will not affect their lives, and his assessment came after he announced last week that he will run for a fifth term in March. Quote, there is enough for us not only to feel confident, let's move forward, Putin said. He said that the country's strengths included a, quote, consolidation of Russian society, the perseverance of the financial economic system, and the increasing possibilities of our army. He conceded, however, that inflation is rising. Putin also said his main aim for his fifth term in the Kremlin that will prolong his over two-decade rule until 2030, is to, quote, strengthen, end quote, Russia's sovereignty. Quote, this means to strengthen the country's defense capabilities and external security, he said. Another priority, he added, will be safeguarding the rights of citizens, despite Moscow unleashing a far-reaching crackdown once sent at home as troops fight Ukraine.
clearly have other issues. Bear with me a moment here. Is meeting leaders of Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, on a whistle-stop Gulf tour. The Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday has hastily arranged talks with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS for short, on oil, Gaza, and Ukraine, hours after visiting Saudi Arabia's Gulf neighbor, United Arab Emirates. It was not immediately clear what Putin, who has rarely left Russia since the start of the Ukraine war, intended to raise specifically about oil or geopolitics in the meeting with the de facto ruler of the world's largest crude exporter. The meeting with MBS, as the princes widely know, comes after a fall in oil prices despite a pledge by OPEC Plus, which groups the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC Plus, and allies led by Russia to further cut output. In introductory remarks shown on Russian television, Putin thanked the Crown Prince for his invitation, saying he had originally expected MBS to visit Moscow, quote, but there were changes to plans, quote. Their next meeting should take place in Moscow, he said, adding that, quote, nothing could prevent the development of our friendly relations, end quote. The Crown Prince told Putin their countries could, quote, work together for the good of the whole world, according to an official interpreter. Russia's defense ministry has earlier shown that the Kremlin chief Ilyushin 96 aircraft flanked by Sukhoi 35S fighter jets on its flight from Russia to the United Arab Emirates. Putin's delegation included top oil, economy, foreign affairs, space, and nuclear energy officials, as well as business leaders. At his first stop in Abu Dhabi, President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan welcomed his, quote, dear friend, end quote, while a flypast of United Arab Emirates jets trailed the colors of the Russian flag. Quote, our relations, largely due to your position, have reached an unprecedentedly high level, Putin told him. The United Arab Emirates is Russia's main trading partner in the Arab world, end quote. Putin said that Russia and the United Arab Emirates cooperated as part of OPEC Plus, whose members pump more than 40% of the world's oil. They would discuss the Israeli-Hamas conflict and Ukraine. He then headed to Riyadh for his first face-to-face talk with MBS since October of 2019, days after a key OPEC Plus meeting was delayed because of disagreements, superseding what should have been an MBS visit to Moscow. Putin's last visit to the region was in July of 2022 when he met Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei in Iran. The Russian president was due to host his Iranian counterpart Ebrahim Raisi in Moscow on Thursday. Now we have this issue of Putin and MBS. The Kremlin has said that as well as oil, Putin and MBS would discuss the war between Israel and Hamas, the situation in Syria and Yemen, and issues such as ensuring stability in the Gulf, while an aid state in Ukraine would also be discussed. But Putin and MBS, who together control one-fifth of the oil pumps each day, have long enjoyed close relations, though both have at times been ostracized by the West. At a G20 summit in 2018, just 2 months after the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in a Saudi consulate, Putin and MBS high-fived and shook hands with smiles. Wednesday's first encounter was just as warm and relaxed. MBS, who's 38, has sought to reassert Saudi Arabia as a regional power with less defense to the United a deference to the United States, which supplies Riyadh with most of its weapons. Putin sent troops into Ukraine in February 2022, said that Russia is engaged in an existential battle with the West and has courted allies across the Middle East, Africa, Latin America, and Asia, and Western attempts amid Western attempts to isolate Moscow. Well, both MBS and Putin, who is 71, need high prices for oil, the lifeblood of their economies. The question for both is how much of the burden each should take on to keep prices aloft and how to verify their contributions. Last month, OPEC Plus delayed a meeting by several days due to disagreements over production levels. The Saudi energy minister said that OPEC Plus also wanted more assurances from Moscow that it would make good on its pledge to reduce fuel exports. Relations between Saudi Arabia and Russia in OPEC Plus have been uneasy at times. A deal on cutting exports almost broke down in March of 2020, but they managed to make up within weeks, and OPEC Plus agreed to record cuts of almost 10% of global demand. Since war broke out between Israel and Hamas in October, Putin has cast the conflict as a failure of U.S. policy in the Middle East and has sought to further develop ties with Arab allies and Iran, as well as with the Palestinian Militant Group. On another issue, Putin arrived in Kyrgyzstan on a first trip abroad since the International Court, Criminal Court arrest warrant. Vladimir Putin arrived in Kyrgyzstan on Thursday, visiting abroad for the first time since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for him in March. Well, Russian news agency TASS, Interfax, and RIA in the Wall Street reported early Thursday morning that Putin had arrived in Kyrgyzstan. He is due to meet his Kyrgyz counterpart, Sadir Yapalov, and to take part in a summit of the Commonwealth of Independent States with his Belarus ally, Alexander Lukashenko, and other regional leaders. A longtime leader has rarely left Russia since launching the Ukraine offensive in February 2022. This year, he has traveled only to Russia-occupied parts of Ukraine, where his last foreign trips to Belarus and Kyrgyzstan last December, a far cry from the busy international schedule he had earlier in his rule. Now, in a sign of Russia's isolation, he is planning to visit North Korea next, as well as China. Moscow has likened the prospect of Putin being arrested abroad to an act of war, casting the warrant as, quote, illegal, end quote. In practice, however, it has taken precautions. In August, Russia sent Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to a BRICS summit in the International Court, Criminal Court, member South Africa, instead of Putin. Well, there is a political show. While the full-scale Ukraine offensive and made Putin a persona non grata in the Western world, the International Criminal Court ruling virtually closed the door to a large part of the globe for him. Rome Statute, a treaty requiring members to adhere to International Criminal Court rulings, has been ratified by 123 countries. The ruling caused a legal headache for the International Criminal Court member, South Africa, which hosted the BRICS summit, to which Putin was invited. In a last-minute decision, Moscow sent its foreign minister instead of Putin. Quote, why should I create some problems for our friends during an event? End quote, Putin said this month, commenting on his absence from Johannesburg. Quote, if I come, a political show will start, end quote, he added. Putin is wanted alongside his children's rights commissioner, Maria Lvova-Belova, for the war crime of allegedly unlawfully deporting thousands of Ukrainian children to Russia. Moscow rejects the allegations. Then we have Armenia Prime Minister who snubs the meeting. The visit comes amid some rifts among Russia's allies. Armenian leader Nikol Pashinyan will skip the summit attended by Putin's host country Kyrgyzstan announced 2 days before the event. Pashinyan has criticized Moscow for not intervening when Azerbaijan launched a successful offensive to take over the breakaway Nagorno-Karabakh region last month. his son came after Armenian lawmakers moved to join the International Criminal Court, angering Moscow and potentially limiting Putin's travel options for him. Putin is planning to meet with the leader of Armenia's arch foe, Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev. Moscow's Ukraine offensive has also rattled Central Asian partners. Putin visited all five regional countries, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Kyrgyzstan, in 2022 portraying them as Russia's core allies. Ahead of Putin's trip, Kyrgyzstan said it had ratified an agreement for a common air defense system with Russia. Moscow has similar deals with other allied countries, including Kazakhstan, Belarus, and Tajikistan. But suspicion of Russia in parts of the region has grown. None of the Central Asian countries supported Russia in a key United Nations vote on Ukraine last year. In September, Kazakhstan even vowed to comply with the massive Western sanctions on Russia, with its leader saying that Astana will not help Moscow circumvent them. Warned their people not to fight in Ukraine alongside Moscow's forces. Some other issues as well. Russia is lying about the United States' role in the alleged Kremlin drone attack, the White House says. Well, the White House on Thursday said that Russia was, quote, lying, end quote, over claims that the U.S. aided Ukraine in an alleged drone attack on the Kremlin and denied any U.S. involvement in the incident. Earlier on Thursday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said during a visit to The Hague, where the International Criminal Court is based, that Russian President Vladimir Putin must be brought to justice for his war in Ukraine. That's like a big statement, so we'll see what happens. Also today, China will promote peace talks on the Ukraine crisis, says the foreign minister. China's foreign minister, Qin Gang, said that Russia will, China, will persist in promoting peace talks for the Ukraine crisis and is, quote, willing to maintain communication and coordination with Russia to make tangible contributions to the political settlement of the crisis, end quote, a foreign ministry statement said today. The statement referred to Kim's meeting with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on the sidelines of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Foreign Ministers meeting in Goa, India, on Thursday. Now, it seems that Ukraine reveals that it downed its own drone in Kyiv after it lost control. The Ukrainian Air Force has announced that it downed its own drone that had lost control over Kyiv on Thursday after a series of explosions shook the capital. At about 8 p.m. Local time, a Bayraktar TB2 unmanned aerial device lost control during a scheduled flight in the Kyiv region. The target was destroyed, quote unquote, the Air Force said, adding it was establishing the cause of a likely, quote unquote, technical malfunction. The head of President Volodymyr Zelensky's office, Andriy Yermak, had previously posted on Telegram saying that the drone had been Russian. Earlier in the evening, Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said a fire had broken out in the Solomyansky district in the west of the city. He said on Telegram there could be wreckage from drone fragments and emergency crews were at the scene. Sergei Popko, the head of the Kyiv City Military Administration, also reported a drone had been downed. And there was no word on casualties or damage. Well, Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the United Nations personnel are going to discuss a grain deal.
Technical personnel from Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, and the United Nations will meet on May 5 to discuss extending a deal allowing the export of Ukrainian grain through the Black Sea, Turkish Defense Minister Hulusi Akar said on Thursday today. The discussion will come ahead of the planned meeting of the deputy defense ministers of Russia, Ukraine, and Turkey next week. Akar also said, adding that Ankara is continuing its efforts for further extension of the deal, which will currently expire on May 18. Well, the drone shut down near the Russian airbase in Crimea since the Moscow installed governor. Russia installed authorities on Thursday said a drone had been shot down near an airbase in Russia annexed Crimea, the latest in a string of such incidents in recent days. Another attack on Sevastopol at about 7 p.m. Air defense, this is local time, air defense forces destroyed an unarmed aerial device in the area of the Belbek airfield. Moscow installed governor of Sevastopol, Mikhail Razovyayev, said on Telegram. The U.S. ambassador to Russia has visited the imprisoned ex-Marine Paul Whelan. The U.S. ambassador to Russia, Lynn Tracy, visited former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, imprisoned in Russia for over 4 years in Mordovia, a southeastern Russian region far from Moscow on Thursday. Quote, today, Ambassador Tracy visited Paul Whelan at IK-17 prison in Mordovia. The U.S. Embassy in Russia said on Twitter, quote, the U.S. government will continue to engage Russian authorities on his case so Paul can come home as soon as possible, and quote, it said, calling his release, quote, an absolute priority. The Ukrainian anti-corruption prosecutors are detaining the Odessa mayor. Ukrainian anti-corruption prosecutors said on Thursday that the Odessa mayor, Hennady Trukhanov, had been detained in connection with an investigation into suspected corruption. Trukhanov was elected mayor of the Black Sea port of Odessa in 2014 and has been under investigation since 2017 over embezzlement allegations, which he has denied. Well, in a France 24 interview, Trukhanov in February about his shifting political allegiances, Ukrainian patriotism in Odessa, and accusations that the mayor was widely seen as a pro-Russian figure. Now we also hear from Poland, who is going to boost its military protection of the Baltic energy infrastructure. Polish government has approved draft legislation, which would allow the military to sink an enemy ship targeting a key gas pipeline from Norway via the Baltic Sea, following NATO's warning that Russia might sabotage undersea energy infrastructure. Quote, in exceptional situations, quote unquote, and when other options have been exhausted, the military will be allowed to foil a terrorist attack by sinking an enemy ship or airship, the government said on Thursday. Well, the government said a permanent base for Coast Guard units would be established in Svinnyesia port, where a terminal for importing liquefied natural gas is located. Last month, Warsaw established a temporary 200 meters exclusion zone around the terminal. NATO's intelligence chief warned on Wednesday that Russia may sabotage undersea cables to punish Western nations for supporting Ukraine. Well, the European Union has warned Moscow not to use drone attacks as an excuse to escalate the war. Well, the European Union foreign policy chief Josep Borrell warned Moscow on Thursday to not use an alleged drone attack that it said targeted the Kremlin to escalate its war in Ukraine. Quote, we call on Russia not to use this alleged attack as an excuse to continue
continue the escalation of the war, end quote, Borrell told journalists as he went in to attend a European Union ministers meeting in Brussels. Quote, this is what worries us. This can be used to justify more conscription of people, more soldiers, more attacks on Ukraine, end quote. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who on Wednesday called for the, quote, physical elimination, end quote, of Zelensky over the purported drone attack, tweeted in imperfect English on Thursday, criticizing Borrell as, quote, an impudent old fool, end quote. Well, Ukraine is unrealistic about not joining NATO during the war, Zelensky said. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said today that Ukraine was, quote, realistic, end quote, that it would not be able to join NATO while still fighting Russia. Quote, we are realistic. We know we will not be in NATO during the war, Zelensky said after meeting Dutch and Belgian Prime Minister Mark Rutte and Alexander De Croo. Quote, but we want a very clear message that we will be in NATO after the war, Zelensky added. Zelensky made a surprise visit to the Netherlands a day after meeting Nordic leaders in Finland to drum up support ahead of Ukraine's awaited counteroffensive against Russia. The Russian TV shows that Putin in the Kremlin for the first time since the drone attack. Russian television on Thursday showed President Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin for the first time since the drone attack in Moscow said was a Ukrainian assassination attempt. Well, state television showed Putin with Economic Development Minister Maxim Reshnikov saying the meeting was inside the Kremlin. The White House said that the Kremlin is lying about the U.S. role in the drone attack. The White House on Wednesday denied any involvement in an alleged drone attack on the Kremlin after Russian spokesman Dmitry Peskov accused Moscow of Washington of guiding Ukraine to launch the assault. Quote, we had nothing to do with this, said John Kirby, spokesperson for the White House National Security Council on MSNBC. Quote, Peskov is just lying there, pure and simple, end quote, he added. Russia alleges that Ukraine carried out a terrorist attack, quote, unquote, overnight Tuesday into Wednesday with two drones aiming to kill President Vladimir Putin, a charge which Kiev has denied. Kirby reiterated in his interview to MSNBC on Wednesday that Washington does not support or condone attacks by Ukraine outside its borders. Quote, we've been clear with them publicly and we've been clear with them privately that we do not encourage nor do we enable them to strike outside Ukraine, he said. Well, the Ukraine believes that the counteroffensive will succeed, Zelensky says. Well, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Thursday that Russia was demoralized on the battlefield and that Kyiv believed its planned counteroffensive to recapture occupied land from Russia forces or Russian forces would be successful. Zelensky told reporters in The Hague that foreign visits he has been making this week were focused on replenishing the strength of Ukrainian forces and that the whole of Ukrainian society was preparing for the counteroffensive. Well, the Berlin police are investigating a Zelensky visit leak. Berlin police said Thursday they would open an investigation after details of a possible trip by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky attributed to the force appeared in media. Well, investigators had launched a probe into the suspected betrayal of secrets in relation to a possible visit by a state president, police said in a statement. The Netherlands will be unwavering in its support for Ukraine, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte said on Thursday during a visit by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to The Hague. Rutte added that Russia cannot win the war in Ukraine and must be held accountable for what he said were crimes of aggression and other war crimes. And then France Van Kat International Affairs editor Angela Dissu gave her analysis of Volodymyr Zelensky's speech in The Hague, in which the Ukrainian president said that Vladimir Putin quote, deserved to be sentenced for its criminal actions, unquote. Furthermore, as quote, Zelensky is always very forthright, and this is his stating his position, of course. Ukraine might not get everything it wants further down the line whenever any negotiations take place, but he is laying down what matters here to Ukraine, Diffie had said. First of all, he has identified that this war was not simply about Russia invading a country. It is about universal values, and that is why so many people support Ukraine. He says it was about freedom and it was about justice, quote unquote. There is, quote, a lot of discussion about when this war might end and what might constitute some sort of acceptable settlement to Ukraine. And there are murmurings that Ukraine should settle for the 2014 borders and forget about Crimea. But Zelensky is saying, no way, we want Crimea back. We want our territory and we want our values, which are universal values, respected, Dixie had said. Zelensky in The Hague said that Putin must face justice. Russian President Vladimir Putin must be brought to justice for his war in Ukraine, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Thursday during a visit to The Hague, where the International Criminal Court is based. The International Criminal Court on March issued an arrest warrant for Putin for suspected deportation of children from Ukraine, and the European Commission has said another international center for the prosecution of the crime of aggression in Ukraine would be set up in The Hague. Quote, we all want to see a different Vladimir here in The Hague, the one who deserves to be sanctioned for his criminal actions here in the capital of international law, Zelensky said in a speech referring to Putin. Quote, I'm sure we will see that happen when we win, he said, adding, quote, however, whoever brings war must receive judgment. Well, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Thursday visited the International Criminal Court in The Hague, which in March issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin for suspected deportation of children from Ukraine. Zelensky, dressed in his traditional khaki or khaki, was welcomed in the court by its president, Judge Pyotr Hovmansky, a Russia which is not a member of the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and rejects its jurisdiction, denies committing atrocities during its conflict with Ukraine, which it terms, quote, a special military operation, end quote. In his first official visit to the country, Zelensky was due to deliver a speech later in the morning, also in The Hague, titled, quote, No Peace Without Justice for Ukraine. The Falkland Cat's former Moscow correspondent, Nick Holdsworth, gave his analysis on the alleged Ukrainian assassination attempt on President Vladimir Putin, end quote. He said, quote, it's very interesting that there was no announcement from the Kremlin about this attack in the early hours of this morning until at least 12 hours after the alleged drone attacks. This attack, and we've all seen the videos of that drone coming in over the dome of the Kremlin and then an explosion. This is in the very center of Moscow, and a lot of people live around there. And in the early hours in the morning, there are people out and about. Quote, this should have been all over Russian social media. There are all kinds of pro-war bloggers who would have left at this and had that video up and out there immediately, Holdsworth said. Nothing of the kind emerged until after the announcement, and that's unusual. So was a pre-dawn drone offensive of revenge for Ukraine's alleged Putin assassination attempt? Ukraine said it destroyed 18 out of 24 Russian drones fired in a pre-dawn attack in the early hours this morning. Just a day after, Russia accused Ukraine of attempting to assassinate President Vladimir, a drone attack on the Kremlin will fall out of Gulliver Krag reported on the situation in Kyiv. Asked if the strikes were a form of Russian revenge, Krag had said, quote, apparently some of the drones that were shot down over Odessa had, quote, for Moscow, quote, unquote, or for the Kremlin, quote, unquote, written on them, which is explicitly stating that these were drones fired in revenge. On the other hand, he pointed out, Russia has been, quote, intensifying drone and missile attacks across Ukraine in recent days, which they say is a bid to eliminate Ukrainian military equipment and personnel ahead of this much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. So whether or not this was really something that they did extra on top of what they were planning to do anyway is anyone's guess, really, end quote. The death toll rose to 23 after the Russian shelling of Ukraine's Kherson. Russian shelling killed 23 people in and near the southern Ukrainian city of Kherson on Wednesday, hitting a hypermarket, a railway station, and residential buildings, the regional governor had said. The enemy's targets are the places where we live. Their targets are our lives and the lives of our children, Governor Oleksandr Polkun had said, announcing the latest death toll in an online video on Thursday. President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday decried the attacks on Kherson, condemning, quote, the bloody trail that Russia leaves behind with its shells, end quote. Well, the Ukrainian air defenses said they downed 18 out of 24 kamikaze drones that Russia launched in a pre-dawn attack on Thursday. In a statement, Kyiv city administration said that all missiles and drones targeting the Ukrainian capital for the third time in 4 days have been destroyed. Russians have attacked Kyiv using Shahed loitering munitions and missiles, likely the ballistic type, the administration said. The Shahed comes from Iran. Out of the 15 Shahed kamikaze drones fired at the Black Sea coastal city of Odessa, air defenses destroyed 12, while 3 struck a university compound. There were no casualties, the Ukrainian Southern Military Command said. Well, Zelensky arrives in the Netherlands today. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is set to make an official visit to the Netherlands on Thursday, where he will deliver a speech and will have meetings with Prime Minister Mark Rutte and members of Parliament. The Dutch government had said, the Dutch Foreign Ministry said that Zelensky was expected to deliver a speech entitled No Peace Without Justice for Ukraine. Well, citing security concerns, government spokespeople declined to provide further details on Zelensky's visit, which would be his first to the country. The Ukrainian leader has visited several foreign capitals, including London, Paris, and Washington, D.C., since Russia's 2022 invasion. Such news agency AFP reported that Zelensky arrived in the Netherlands by airplane late on Wednesday after a visit to Finland. Well, there were explosions early in the morning heard in Kyiv and other Ukrainian cities. Explosions were heard in the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv and other cities in the early hours of Thursday morning. Officials and media outlets said that some local authorities reporting that anti-aircraft defenses were at work. Russia has regularly bombarded Ukraine since October last year, striking at a variety of targets. The latest blasts were reported less than 24 hours after Kyiv said that 21 people died in a Russian strike on the city of Kherson. Air defenses are working in the Kyiv region, the regional military administration said on Telegram. Reuters witnesses in the city said there had been at least one loud blast. Ukrainian public broadcaster Suspilne reported explosions in the southern city of Zaporizhia, and Yuri Malashko, the head of the Zaporizhia Regional Military Administration, said on Telegram that anti-aircraft defenses were working. Local media also reported blasts in the Black Sea port of Odessa. Air alerts had been sounded in most of the eastern half of the country, according to an official government map. well, it seems like part of the South Russian oil refinery has caught fire after a drone attack, reports Russian media. Part of an oil refinery in southern Russia is on fire after it was hit by a drone attack. The Tass News agency cited local emergency services as saying early on Thursday. Tass said that the incident occurred at the Ilyushsky refinery near the Black Sea port of Novorossiysk. It cited a source as saying a fuel reservoir was on fire but gave no details. Ukraine rarely claims responsibility for what Moscow says are frequent drone strikes against the infrastructure and military targets, particularly in regions close to Russia. Okay. Last June, the Novoshakhtinsk oil refinery in Russia's Rostov region bordering Ukraine suspended operations after two unmanned aerial vehicles attacked its facilities. A senior Ukrainian presidential official said on Wednesday that Kyiv had nothing to do with any drone attack on the Kremlin, adding that such a move would achieve nothing for Kyiv on the battlefield and would only provoke Russia to take more radical action. Russia has accused or had accused Ukraine of attempting to assassinate President Vladimir Putin with such a drone attack. And this came as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Finland for a surprise visit and talks with Nordic leaders. Okay, so let's look at some other issues. Bear with me a moment. Well, the European Union is facing a challenge from Hungary's Orbán over plans to increase Ukraine support. So the European Union is mulling billions in funding for Ukraine on the eve of Ukraine, of the Ukraine aid summit. And Macron hosts Hungary's Orbán in a bid to unlock the European Union support for Ukraine. And one second. This is really quite interesting. Harvard is caught in the crossfire with respect to the Israel-Hamas war, which roils the Ivy League campus. America's prestigious Ivy League universities have found themselves embroiled in controversy since the October 7 Hamas attack on Israel and Israel's ensuing bombardment of Gaza. While some students are protesting loudly against the war, others are denouncing a rise in antisemitism. And this tense situation is putting the institution's leaders in the hot seat with pressure from politicians and donors. Harvard's president, Claudine Gay, has been backed by the school's governing board despite an unconvincing appearance before Congress, while the head of the University of Pennsylvania, Elizabeth McGill, has been forced to resign. Our correspondent, Fanny Allard, reports from the campus of Harvard with Fraser Jackson. So, wait a moment, let me see if I have this correctly. Look at this. One moment. This is very interesting. Bear with me a second here. Going to Senegal in Africa. A Senegalese judge has ordered the reinstatement of the jailed opposition leader Sonko onto the electoral roll. Senegalese judge today ordered the jailed opposition leader Ousmane Sonko be reinstated on the electoral roll, clearing the way for him to stand in next year's presidential election.
considered. The volunteer. Totally unexpected. Q4, people have been arrested in Denmark, the Netherlands, and on suspicion of planning a terror attack. Three people were arrested in coordinated actions across Denmark and one person in the Netherlands on suspicion of plotting to carry out, quote, an act of terror, end quote, the Danish police said today. Unbelievable. Well, the operational chief of Denmark Security and Intelligence Service, Flemming Dreyer, and senior police inspector and head of emergency services in the Copenhagen police, Peter Dahl, held a press conference on a coordinated police action in Copenhagen on December 14th. So, Flemming Dreyer, the operative head of Denmark Security and Intelligence Service, known by its acronym PET, said that Denmark was not changing the terror threat level, which has been at, quote, serious, end quote, the second highest level since 2010. He added that the case had, quote, threads abroad, end quote, and was related to criminal gangs, quote, end quote, singling out the band gang loyal to Familia. Well, in January 2020, a Danish court upheld a nationwide police ban on the gang, saying that the LTF should be dissolved as illegal under Denmark's constitution. The gang had been behind gang feuds, violence, robberies, extortion, and drug sales in the Danish capital, and, quote, had used violence and illegal means to achieve that its goal, end quote, the Copenhagen District Court said then. In September of 2018, police in Denmark issued a temporary ban against the LTF and said that anyone seen wearing its logo could face prosecution. Persons aboard have been charged, he said. In a serious situation, Dreyer told a press conference, adding the arrests were, quote, carried out in close collaboration with our foreign partners, end quote, and said that those arrested were part of a network, quote-unquote. Dreyer added that the suspects would face a custody hearing within 24 hours, likely behind double closed doors, end quote, meaning that he could not give details about the case, any target or motive. Quote, this is extremely serious, Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, at a European Union summit in Brussels, quote, it shows the situation we are in Denmark, unfortunately, end quote. Continuing, it is absolutely true when both Denmark's intelligence agencies say that there is a high risk of Denmark, Frederiksen said. It is, of course, completely unacceptable in relation to Israel and Gaza that there is someone who takes a conflict somewhere else in the world into Danish society. Earlier this month, the European Union's Home Affairs Commissioner, Eva Johansson, warned that Europe faces a, quote, huge risk of terrorist attacks, end quote, over the Christmas holiday period due to the fallout from the war between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas. In July of 2022, a gunman at a shopping mall in Copenhagen killed three people and injured seven. The man, who believed that the victims were zombies, was sentenced in July to detention in a secure medical facility. He had been charged with murder and attempted murder in the rampage at the huge Fields shopping center on the outskirts of Copenhagen. In 2015, a 22-year-old Danish Muslim gunman killed two people and wounded five others at a free speech event and a synagogue. Copenhagen. Earlier this month, the Danish Parliament passed a law making it illegal to desecrate any holy text after a handful of anti-Islam activists carried out public desecration of the Quran, sparking angry demonstrations in Muslim countries.
There was a
seconds here. This is really quite interesting. The University of Pennsylvania president, Liz Buell, resigns. In his statement, Scott Walk acknowledged that the university president erred during her disastrous testimony describing, quote, dreadful 30-second soundbites following the Galaxy hearing. Quote, former President Liz McGill last week made a very unfortunate misstep consistent with that of two peer university leaders sitting alongside her after 5 hours of aggressive questioning before a congressional committee. Said that the outgoing chairman of the Board of Trustees at the University of Pennsylvania. Quote, following that, it became clear that her position was no longer tenable, and she and I concurrently decided that it was time for her to exit, end quote. Bach said he wished McGill, quote, well in her future endeavors, end quote, and praised her as a, quote, good person and a talented leader who was beloved by her team, end quote. Furthermore, she is not the slightest bit anti-Semitic. Working with her was one of the greatest pleasures of my life. Worn down by months of relentless external attacks, she was not herself last Tuesday, Bach had said. Our prepared and overboard, given the hostile forum and high strikes, she provided a legalistic answer to a moral question. Well, the university leaders have been elevated duties to the Jeffrey Thomas of the Yale School of Management. In response to McGill's resignation, Jeffrey Thomas, the Dean of Leadership Studies at the Yale School of Management, sent a statement before the House Committee. University leaders have an elevated duty to fortify the truth and protect their campus community from hate, threats, and violence. Freedom of expression is, quote, not, end quote, an absolute right anywhere in society. Hate speech is different from speech, she said. These college leaders were overloaded, but still underprepared and show an absence of judgment. Well, Scott Bach resides as the chair of the United University of Pennsylvania Board of Trustees effective immediately. Well, Scott Bach, the chairman of the Board of Trustees at the University of Pennsylvania, submitted his resignation effective immediately. In a statement, Bach said, quote, today, following the resignation of the University of Pennsylvania's president and related Board of Trustees meetings, I submitted my resignation as chair of the University Board of Trustees effective immediately. I asked to remain in that role for the remainder of my term in order to help with the presidential transition. Concluded that for me, now was the right time to depart. Evidently, senators are going to introduce a resolution condemning Hamas's use of sexual violence. Democratic Senator Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire is introducing a new resolution with a bipartisan group of senators to condemn Hamas's use of sexual violence and rape as a weapon of war against the people of Israel, according to a copy of the resolution shared with CNN. The Senate-led resolution, which did not mention any recent remarks made by lawmakers, comes shortly after Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington State, quote, cleanup comments he made to CNN's Dana Bush on the topic that set off a firestorm among her Democratic colleagues. A group of 16 senators signing into the resolution called on the Senate to condemn, quote, in the strongest terms, the deliberate use of gender-based violence against women and children and men in Israel during the terrorist attacks on October 7, 2023, and says the international community must, quote, take every step possible, end quote, to end the use of rape as a weapon of war, including courage but responding to testimonials of victims and condemning gender-based violence as soon as it is reported. Quote, the deliberate use of rape and sexual violence as a weapon of war by Hamas terrorists against the people of Israel is atrocious, Jason said in a statement to CNN. Quote, I'm proud to join with my colleagues, including Alabama Republican Senator Kaki Britt, to introduce a bipartisan resolution that strongly condemns the barbaric attacks on October 7th and the sexual and gender-based violence carried out by Hamas against the people of Israel. Rich, who is co-sponsoring the resolution, is just new and has seen footage of the atrocities committed by Hamas on October 7th, sending statements as a mother, as a daughter, as a sister, and as an American. I was absolutely horrified by the acts of pure evil carried out against innocent Israeli women and young girls and men. Men's penises were cut off. The resolution not only puts pressure on the international community to take action against Hamas' use of rape against Israelis, but it also resurfaces underlying tensions within the Democratic Party over even the most basic truths surrounding the war between Israel and Hamas. Earlier this month, while Jaya Powell condemned the rape of Israeli women by Hamas and called it horrific on CNN's State of the Union, he pointed out that over 15,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli attacks in Gaza since the start of the war. Quote, I think we have to be balanced about bringing in the outrages against Palestinians, she said at the time. Jaya Powell's Democratic colleagues quickly accused her of being tone deaf for not unequivocally condemning Hamas's use of rape against Israeli women. In the midst of the fallout, Jaya Powell issued a new statement saying she, quote, unequivocally condemns Hamas's use of rape and sexual violence as an act of war, end quote, and said her comment to Bash on CNN, quote, about violence was not about rape and not intended to minimize rape but sexual assault in any way, end quote. The tension around Jaya Powell's comment speaks to the broader division within the Democratic Party over how to address the war between Israel and Hamas. Her remarks come as Democrats have struggled to reconcile support for Israel's right to defend itself in the wake of the October 7 attacks and rising protests, especially on the left, over the devastation in Gaza. Two House Democrats are also working on their own resolution to condemn the use of sexual violence as a weapon of war by Hamas against the people of Israel, as first reported by CNN. This is really interesting. This is an opinion piece written by Dean Obaidala, the deeply unsettling reason that explains Trump's attacks on Obamacare, by Dean Obaidala. Well, Dean Obaidala is a former attorney and the host of Sirius XM Radio's daily program, The Dean Obaidala Show. You can follow him on Threads, the opinion expressed in this commentary are his own. And so former President Donald Trump is increasingly focusing on an unachieved objective from his days in the White House, repealing Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act. But Trump raised the issue of getting rid of Obamacare in a social media post over Thanksgiving weekend. He followed it up last week with another post about Obamacare, this time vowing to, quote, replace it, end quote, with something much better, quote, end quote. Furthermore, he said, America will have one of the best health care plans around anywhere in the world, Trump wrote during a campaign stop in Iowa on Saturday. The former president again drilled down on his latest fixation, calling Obamacare a disaster, end quote, and promising, quote, to do something about it, end quote. These recent remarks have stunned some political pundits, among them Republican strategists who fear the comments will hurt the GOP in the 2024 election, given the wide popularity of the Affordable Care Act. It's a risky political move, but Trump's latest attacks on Obamacare are notable for another reason. If the past is any guide, it is highly unlikely that he actually has a fantastic, quote-unquote, health care plan in the works. Trump made a similar pledge to do away with Obamacare throughout the 2016 presidential campaign. Once elected, Trump repeatedly promised that he would deliver a phenomenal, quote-unquote, health care plan. It was a promise he made right through the closing months of his presidency and failed to follow through on it. But the truth is, Trump's latest vow to repeal Obamacare is not about policy. Trump has other aims. First, he believes going after the signature achievement of President Obama plays well with his base. The Affordable Care Act has the support of nearly 60% of Americans, so it might seem an unlikely target of political attack, except for the fact that Obama was extremely unpopular with the GOP base. Among Republicans, only 18% approved of how Obama handled his two terms in the White House. Second, Trump has long appeared obsessed with attacking and, if at all possible, undoing Obama's legacy. When Obama left office in January of 2017, a CNN poll showed him with a 60% approval rating, landing him near the top of the list of presidential approval ratings upon leaving office. In contrast, Trump left office with a 34% approval rating, the lowest of his term. And those numbers must stick in the craw of a braggadocious man who has always seemed obsessed with being the biggest of the best. One second. Well, Trump may also be engaged in a classic maneuver of political sleight of hand. The more the media talks about Obamacare, the less press attention there might be on the 91 criminal charges he's facing. But there's another deeply unsettling possible motive. A racial component may be at play in Trump's attacks on the legacy of the first black president. Some pundits have long expressed the view that Trump often appears to be driven by racism and that a similar motivation may be part of the thinking of his Make America Great Again followers. Trump understands his base better than any of us. No matter of political divisiveness, he surely knows that attacking Obama will please his supporters. Trump's failure to denounce white supremacists until being ashamed to do so to his repeated attacks on prominent black figures, the demonization of the Black Lives Matter movement, incidentally paints, quote-unquote, his resharing of social media posts written by white supremacists, his excoriation of immigrants from what he called shithole countries, and, quote-unquote, on and on racial insult never seems far from Trump's agenda. Vowing to erase the signature achievement of America's first and only black president would be very much up in the same thing. Trump sought to undermine President Obama, starting with his 2011 racist and false birther campaign, quote-unquote, seeking to cast Obama as an illegitimate president. Trump said in April of 2011 on NBC's Today Show, I have people studying Obama's birth certificate and they cannot believe what they're finding, he added. If he wasn't born in this country, which is a real possibility, then he has pulled one of the greatest cons in the history of politics. Trump even claimed in 2011 that Obama was a terrible student, quote unquote, and questioned how he could have been accepted Ivy League bachelor at Columbia University and Harvard Law, both schools from which Obama graduated. He then demanded Obama release his school records. And of course, it's hard to forget the 2011 White House Correspondents Association dinner where Obama comically embarrassed Trump. Some have opined that this comedic smackdown few Trump's run for the White House, as well as the grudge he appears to have nursed ever since. The more the media covers policy debates involving Trump, the more it helps him seem like a normal political candidate and not the clear and present danger to American democracy that J. Michael Luttig, a former GOP-appointed federal appeals court judge, warned us that Trump remains. Trump's efforts to target Obamacare are not about providing Americans better health care. After all, he had 4 years in the White House to do that. It's really about helping one person, Donald J. Trump, the only person in the former president the president seems to care about. We'll see where all that goes. We'll just check this out. Unbelievable. A Palestinian student knocked on a neighbor's door to get help for his friends before realizing he had also been shot. This is outrageous. A Palestinian college student described how his training as an emergency medical technician helped him respond when he and his friends were shot in Vermont over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Kinan Abdalhamid spoke to CNN by phone Wednesday night, detailing a harrowing account of being shot with his friends, Shan Awatani and Tahsin Ali Ahmad. A gunman is accused of shooting the trio while they were taking a walk in a Burlington neighborhood after spending time with family and friends last Saturday night. On the way back, we see this man on his porch, essentially looking away from us. He turns around, looks at us, and without saying a word, it was almost surreal. He went down the steps, pulled out a pistol, and shot my friend. I heard the thud on the ground, and then he started screaming, Abdalhamid, who counted. A split second later, he shot my other friend, and I hear this thud on the ground. He said that he believes his friends were dead because they were shot from such close range. It really seemed that he was aiming to kill, he said. Shooting came as Muslims, Palestinians, Jews, and other communities in the United States say they are becoming increasingly fearful of hate-motivated attacks as war between Israel and Hamas continues in the Middle East. Recent weeks, the fatal stabbing of a 6-year-old Palestinian American born in the Chicago area and the death of a Jewish protester during a rally in Southern California accentuate tensions felt in communities nationwide. Abdalhamid was 20, recalled to CNN running away from the scene before the man shot him, an attack on the group he believes was hate-motivated. I was able to jump the fence of one of the houses. I believe that's when he shot me, said Abdalhamid, who was shot in his lower extremities. Before realizing he was shot, Abdalhamid managed to knock on the neighbor's door, and that person called 911. That's when I noticed a sharp pain. So I put my hand behind my back, and that's when I realized my hand was soaked in blood. Abdalhamid continued. Abdalhamid said his recently completed training as a paramedic helped him determine that there was no time to lose. Because I'm an EMT, I know that what helped me was that with gunshot wound victims, there is a better chance of survival if the police just drive you straight to the hospital. So I told them, hey, please drive me straight to the hospital. I'm losing consciousness. We can't wait for the ambulance. And they drove. Abdalhamid, a Haverford college student, said that the well-being of his two friends remains a priority throughout what he described as a, quote, black nightmare. Abdalhamid was released from the hospital earlier this week, while Awatani and Ahmad remain hospitalized as their injuries were more severe. Jason Eaton, 48, was charged with attempted murder. he has pleaded not guilty and is being held without bail. Earlier this week, Eaton's attorney, Margaret Jantz, said it was, quote, premature to speculate, end quote, about a possible hate crime motivation. After the shooting, Abdelhamid and his two friends saw each other again at the hospital, he said. And that's where they reached consensus as to what allegedly drove the gunman to shoot them. Quote, we all agreed essentially in 1 second, probably because we spoke Arabic. Nothing else is in our heads makes sense as to why he would do this, he said. Burlington Police, the lead agency in the investigation, had previously confirmed two of the three young men were also wearing keffiyehs, traditional Palestinian scarves worn in a sign of solidarity with Palestinians. And police are looking into whether these factors made the three young men targets of the hate-motivated attack. Quote, I believe if he was just out there to just shoot someone, I think that would have happened a while back, Abdelhamid said. That's just the most logical thing. The trio had gone for at least one other walk through the neighborhood wearing the keffiyehs during the holiday, a weekend that feared that he may have stalked them before the shooting, Abdelhamid had said. Court records obtained by CNN echo much of Abdelhamid's account and includes a diagram he drew for police the night of the shooting. The sketch indicates for police where he was shot, fled, and ultimately found help that night. Well, hate crimes are explained. Could the suspects who shot three Palestinian students be charged with a hate crime? Burlington Mayor Nero Weinberger said that investigators have not reached a conclusion on what motivated the attack. He said in a separate interview with CNN on Wednesday, nothing that I've heard at this point is that critical piece of information that we're all looking for that would really explain how it could have done this, Weinberger told CNN. Abdelhamid is back with his family and is beginning his physical and emotional recovery while attempting to keep the focus on his two lifelong friends. I really urge everyone to pour their support into Tahsin and Hisham because they both are still in the beginning stages of recovery. I just hope they come out well and safe, he said. Speaking to ABC The View on Thursday, he expressed gratitude for the love and support he has received. Quote, I didn't expect a story about a Tahsin who was shot to go this far and why. Extremely grateful, but I still have this underlying fear because of the experience he did. His mother, Tamara Tamimi, expressed the same gratitude, but also a deep frustration with the treatment of Palestinian people in the United States. We thought we would be safer here, she told the team. I feel like no Palestinian is safe anywhere. The victim's mother sees her son for the first time. Abdelhamid's friend, Hisham Awatani, is still recovering at the hospital, and there's a possibility he may not be able to walk again due to a spinal injury that will require long-term care, officials have said. Awatani's mother, Elizabeth Price, saw him for the first time on Wednesday at the hospital after arriving in Vermont from the West Bank. She told CNN's Erica Hill he was alert after having surgery and happy to see his parents again. Quote, it was painful, end quote, Price said. It was painful seeing our son, who we had seen last in the summertime, so incapacitated. Price said her son told her he believed the attack was targeted because they were Palestinian. He sees the attack was in the context of the oppression of his people. Unquote. Furthermore, as he's described, he's just one casualty of a much wider conflict. And so I think he sees this in a much larger context of the dehumanization of the Palestinian people, she added. He sees this as something that comes along with the identity of being a Palestinian, that people don't respect the validity of what it is to be a Palestinian and respect the humanity of Palestinians, Christ added. Press noted that since the war began, three victims have expressed feeling unsafe over roughly the past 2 months. The childhood friends had grown up in the Israeli-occupied West Bank and attended school in Ramallah before enrolling in U.S. colleges. Awatani attended Brown University in Rhode Island, and Ahmad is a student at Trinity College in Connecticut, according to the Institute for Middle East Understanding. I think all three young men had experienced a sense of insecurity, even on their campuses, the last 7 weeks, she said. So that's like a major issue. Let's just see if anything else to cover. By Jeff Duncan. The best way to keep Trump off ballot. Jeff Duncan is a CNN political contributor and Republican, served as Georgia's lieutenant governor from 2019 to 2023. Former professional baseball player and the author of GOP 2.0, How the 2020 Election Can Lead to a Better Way Forward for America's Conservative Party. The views expressed in this commentary are his own. So the stars continue to align former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley's quest to emerge as the most viable alternative to former President Donald Trump in the Republican presidential race. At the start of December, the last 4 months of the campaign, before votes began to be cast, the former United Nations ambassador has been buoyed by a string of positive developments, including this week's endorsement by the deep-pocketed political network affiliated with Charles Koch, with the Koch brothers, with the clock ticking, the time is now for others who want the GOP to move past the Trump era to follow suit and consolidate their support around her. The case for Haley goes beyond any one event, but is rather made by an accumulation of factors that have fueled her momentum. To start, there have been the matters within her control. Since the entering the race in February as the first challenger to the disgraced former president, Haley has executed a largely error-free campaign operation. Running for president is no easy feat, and Haley and her team deserve credit for their effort to date. Fundraising is one of the key barometers of health for a candidate, and Haley has raised money at a healthy clip, $11 million in the third quarter of 2013, while also spending resources wisely, while the figure is well short of the $45 million third quarter haul for the Trump campaign. Haley's camp has more than $9.1 million in cash on hand for the primary, more than the $5 million available to Florida Governor Chris DeSantis. Haley's ability to launch a $10 million ad campaign in the early states of Iowa and New Hampshire, airing this week through Iowa's factory. The ads represent the largest investment she has made to date in a significant buy in small states. Unlike the DeSantis to Haley operation has been fully a public drama. Another super PAC smoothly launched this week, this one aimed at helping her win the support of independent voters. The five entrepreneurs behind it include Jonathan Bush, a cousin of former President George W. Bush, and by contrast, DeSantis also has the support of a new political group, Spike Right, Inc., but the venture only came about after the CEO approached Democracy Studios. Well, it seems that damaging headlines from DeSantis is affiliated outside entities about questionable spending and internal strife amid Haley's rise continue to create unhelpful distractions. Initially billed as the DeSantis' secret weapon, Never Back Down burned through $34 million during the summer months, a time when the Florida governor slid from being the clear second-place challenger to Trump to the middle of the pack. The vast majority resources of Nehru backed out nearly $100 million. At the last public hearing period in 2030. This is what was just a statement just came out of the White House from President Joe Biden, marking 11 years since the Sandy Hook shooting. I mean, in my mind, it seemed like yesterday. I didn't realize 11 years had passed by. So 11 years ago today, the soul of Newtown, the soul of Connecticut, and the soul of the nation were pierced forever when 26 souls were stolen at Sandy Hook Elementary School, within minutes, a shooter armed with a weapon of war took the lives of 20 first grade students who had their whole lives ahead of them, and 6 educators who bravely sacrificed their own safety to protect their students. Today, those first grade students should be seniors in high school, dreaming big and about to embark on their adult lives. We should not have to live like this. It is a national tragedy that over a decade later, our nation's gun violence epidemic is still not solved. My administration is implementing the bipartisan Safer Communities Act to the fullest extent under the law. We have taken dozens of executive actions, and this fall I established the first ever White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention to take every action available to save lives. But it's not enough. We will not be able to protect Americans from the threat of gun violence until Congress does its part and takes common sense and proven measures like passing universal background checks, banning assault weapons, and high-capacity magazines and more. Our nation owes a debt of gratitude to the courageous survivors, families, first responders, and Connecticut officials who turned their deep grief into action. Their years of advocacy made the bipartisan Safer Communities Act possible. We must continue to follow their lead and honor the innocent lives who were stolen that horrible day by turning our pain into purpose, our loss into determination, and our collective and justifiable anger into a deep-seated commitment for change. Today, Jill and I are praying for the families and survivors of the Newtown community and every single community that has been ripped apart by this senseless violence. May God bless them. So that's what I realized had just come through. And so I'm really pleased that I was able to read this to you. So that'll be the end of our time together. We're going to shut off. It's about 20 minutes or so before the end of our segment today, but I've got some appointments to attend. So take care and be well. Goodbye.